Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. In a dramatic reversal, Trump has embraced Biden's Ukraine proxy war on Russia. American arms will be purchased by European NATO countries, then transferred to the Kiev regime. This will certainly prolong the conflict. This is now Trump's war. Crosstalking Trump's War, I'm joined by my guests, Karen Kwiatkowski in Mount Jackson. She is a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, having served at both NSA and the Office of Secretary of Defense. In High Beach, we have Craig Passe-Jadulai. He is co-host of The Convo Couch. And in Plymouth, we cross to Patrick Henningsen. He is the editor and founder of 21st Century Wire. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Karen, let me go to you first here. In light of what Donald Trump has done, this kind of very convoluted strategy about selling arms to the Europeans. The Europeans will somehow pay for it with what money, I'm not really sure. Frozen assets seized from Russia, going into debt, selling what arms, what kind, that's very unclear. And will it be enough? Because I thought yesterday we were told that there were no excess arms to be sold. Irrespective of all I just said there, one simple question. What's the strategy?
Oh, my gosh, that's a hard question. You know, Trump, I think, is just trying to stay on top of the news. He's trying to stay on top of whatever chaos he's creating. There is no strategy. There is a significant shortage of these materials, you know, Patriot systems and JASSMs, and these things are not plentiful. NATO is out of money. The NATO countries don't want to spend that money. None of this proposal makes any sense. But he is pursuing it because he's like a clown standing on a ball. He's trying to stay on top of
everything. Well, it's like for the lack of another strategy, and the strategy is Biden's, and so he's just reverted to that, which he ran against. Yeah. Okay, Craig, let me go to you. I mean, this is obviously going to prolong the conflict. I thought Trump wanted to end the conflict, and sanctioning, putting tariffs on Russia. No, this is sanctioning the world. It's people that countries that are buying from Russia. Those are sanctions against even American allies and friends. I mean, again, what is the strategy here? And one thing that was not mentioned yesterday on Monday is how to get to peace.
Yeah, well, because peace is not the goal. It never was. I mean, how many times do presidents say, you know, give all these promises on the campaign trail only to let us down when they get in there? And I think it's clear right now that Donald Trump has never had control. I believe there was an interview not too long ago where Vladimir Putin was talking about that. Every single time we get a president in there, and he referred to Obama, said Obama maybe wanted to close Guantanamo Bay, but as soon as they get in, they can't do anything. Well, to be honest with you, I never believed that Donald Trump was going to end this war. I never believed he had the ability or the power to end it. And I never believed, Peter, as well, that Putin bought into it. I think they just played along so they look good on the global stage. They crossed their T's, dot their I's, and they've done everything right. So now they can just continue to play the blame game, and they got the goal they wanted, which is endless war.
Well, Patrick, you were nodding your head in agreement. Why?
Well, I think Craig's basically expressing the reality of the situation, but I think it's much worse than that. I think the United States right now is stuck in a terminal death spiral with regards to Ukraine. So is Europe. And it's all predicated on a sort of chain of tropes and erroneous ideas about the reality of the conflict, how it started. I mean, how it actually started, nobody actually wants to talk about. But now Europe is basically locked into this bizarre situation where the United States is, you know, twisting their arm to spend 5% of GDP to arm up to meet beyond their NATO commitments and whatnot. And where's that money going to come from, as you said, Peter? Is it going to have they discovered oil in Germany or something? I mean, is there something that we've missed? They're going to run massive deficits, and that's going to mean austerity for Europe. The European economy is already hobbling, so it's going to mean a lot worse for Britain, for Europe, for all these countries, and for the United States. They're going to profit from that misery in Europe. So I think they're talking like they want to ramp up this new warm, cold war, and they believe that they can fight this proxy war in perpetuity because everybody's making money in the process. That's one of the big, that's the one way you can get people to believe their own propaganda and BS, as if there's a sufficient compensation for believing in it. And that's exactly what you have in Europe right now. It's exactly what you have in the United States. And right down the whole chain of society, academia has bought into this militarization,
and Patrick,
have the politicians.
Let's not forget the elite in Kiev. They're profiting from this as well. You know, Karen, you know, it's a question I've asked over and over again, you know, if it's Biden or now it's Trump, how does this help Ukraine? Ukraine is being destroyed, depopulated. It's becoming politically unstable. You know, all of these things are for Ukraine, but at the end of the day, what Ukraine is going to be left after all of this? Karen.
I think very little is going to be left as a border. It'll literally be a borderland that is not really a country. But if you look back at Biden's proposals, and even before that, in 2014, under Obama, Ukraine was a battlefield of this new Cold War, really, that they want, because the Cold War was actually very good for the U.S. government and for its lackeys and its hangers-on, its business, its defense industry. Very good for that. Huge profits, never a lot of tests of capability. You know, we're seeing that our militaries are mismatched. You know, our technology, we have very expensive weapon systems that don't do very well on the battlefield. They're very costly to replace and repair. But it profited so many people in the United States, so many parts of government. Congress was very happy. So Ukraine was really, I think, always designated as ultimately a demilitarized zone of some sort, enforced with kind of like in Korea, kind of a DMZ that could perpetuate war and conflict. And also, I think we underestimate, you know, Biden blew up Nord Stream with the Germans' consent, which was a German investment, big-time German investment. They willingly trashed that. And that whole operation really was about subjugating as much as possible Europe to American energy supplies and to America's rules. That's clearly, Trump doesn't disagree with that at all. Trump has been very open about his interest in subjugating.
But you know what, Karen, what's really whimsical about that, Karen, I'm agreeing with you, but the European elites have gone along with it so willingly. Yeah. Let me throw that to Craig. I mean, you know, this is subjugation and they are embracing it. I mean, you know, Mark Rutte, you know, Fruity Rudy there, he was saying with beaming smile, yes, this is the way it should be. We will pay for it. He was so happy. It was almost like a Saturday Night Live skit. Craig.
Yeah, and he was talking about his new allies, Canada, and the Scandinavian countries are going to jump on in. And that's why I believe they'll find some weapons somewhere. You know, it's hard for me to believe that the West hasn't, you know, armed enough of their allies who haven't been in any conflicts for quite some time to scrape up some stuff. But what really perplexes me, Peter, is the fact that it seems to me that they are really gearing up for an all-out war against the BRICS nations. Really, at the end of the day, you know, the jostling, the bombing of Iran, the continuing going on with this proxy war, it's looking like they want something bigger. I always thought that Ukraine was the testing ground for new weapons in, you know, this new warfare, this modern warfare. And unfortunately, they really were, for the United States, they can't compare with the Russians over there, especially in their territory. But I'm scared because it does seem, you know, we just heard Donald Trump go after Lula the other day. That's the B in the BRICS. So it looks like they're just drawing sides, and I'm getting myself prepared for an all-out world war.
I agree with you, but I'll go even further. Patrick, the Third World War has already started. We just don't call it yet.
Yes. Look, you know, the Ukraine obviously can't fight this war forever. Although the people in Kiev, the regime in Kiev would certainly like to keep the situation going in perpetuity. And there are those really deluded in the U.S. and Europe that believe they can keep this proxy war going indefinitely. But it has limits. Ukraine has manpower issues. All the equipment in the world, all the weapons in the world, if you can't field people to fight in the field or to operate them, it's not going to work. So there's an expiration date to rearm Europe, to build up, to militarize Russia's western border with Europe and arm the Arctic. That's the new talking point as well. And Donald Trump just sits back. If you notice that presser the other day, he says, "Well, Ukraine needs weapons to defend themselves." What they're going to send to Ukraine isn't to defend itself. Ukraine can't defend itself against Russia. What they can do is provide them with offensive weapons to continue to antagonize and hit targets within Russia, in order to basically keep the peace process dead and cold. And that's exactly what the strategy is, to keep this thing going as long as possible. Because, listen, they believe they're still stuck on these old Cold War tropes, like, we won the Cold War because we bled the Russian economy. We're going to make this their Afghanistan. It's always this rehashing of old themes. And this is the currency of the realm in Washington. And they believe that the Russian economy is just an inch away from being put onto its heels and, you know, regime change potentially down the road. They think that there is a win if they can just keep pushing long enough, and then drone swarms come in and then new offensive weapons. That is the game plan coming out of Europe and the United States. It might sound crazy, but that's what they have.
It's not crazy, because one of our favorite guests, Professor Mirandi from Iran, he's on this program, and we've always talked about how the West treats Iran and Russia as be basically the same. You kick in the door and the roof will fall in. And this is what's peddled over and over again. And I would surmise that they're forcing a Article 5 situation to see if Russia will blink. That's called brinkmanship. And with this man in the White House and the European leadership that we have, that is the worst possible mixture you could imagine. All right, at this point, I'm going to interrupt myself. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war. Okay, Karen, I think at this point, summing up Trump's foreign policy to date, there are three words that, you know, that are obvious, apparent: ultimatums, sanctions, and tariffs. Well, Russia is a target of all three. What's going to happen after the 50 days?
That's a good question. Probably Russia will be doing even better in its foreign affairs and activities in Ukraine, and its ruble will continue to rise. You know, Russia will do fine. This Trump is, you know, those three things are all financial, and I think the empire that America is trying to save is a financial empire, and it's built on a debt burden dollar that people, it's no longer popular. And it's built on threats via that dollar, which are no longer working. So it's a losing battle that Trump is playing. And again, I think the rest of the world, the other world leaders, really have to be careful with Trump, because there is not a hint, but a very evident case of desperation in what he's doing. So it's very concerning.
Yeah, Karen, because if you have the Japanese, the South Koreans, and the Chinese talking about trade, three unlikely, you know, that's a odd triplet there. If they're huddling together vis-a-vis U.S. trade, then you know something is going wrong for the empire. You know, Craig, you know, it seems, I already mentioned here, you know, I think we are in the Third World War. We don't call it yet, because if you look what's going on with the Trump's machinations with Netanyahu, you know, it was already mentioned here, testing weapons. Well, all those weapons have been tested on the people of Gaza. And this, you know, the unprovoked attack on Iran. All of these things are connected. It is the we see a concerted effort to maintain hegemony, which they're losing. And the more they go down this path, the more they will lose their hegemony. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that attack on Iran was unprovoked, Peter. Senator Kennedy said they were days away from getting a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
And then when he was asked, who gave you that information? Was that from Israel, United States? He said, with a straight face, I don't know, but that justified the attack.
Well, what's worse is that he doesn't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he once said, these people want to drink the blood of Americans out of their boots and yell death to America. So that justifies everything. But you know what? I got to really say this. I don't look at Trump as being any different than any United States president. You know, the rhetoric might be a little bit different. Yeah, it might be more WWE style, so middle America can really grasp and say, go Trump. But he does the same thing. It might be different. He calls it a tariff, but he does what every single president of the empire does. He sanctions or threatens to bomb you. Or if you get way out of line, they'll sanction and bomb you. So, I mean, I don't see it any different. I see the empire going along with doing what they're normally doing. And we just got to see how this plays out.
Well, I mean, Craig, to stay with you here, I agree with your assessment. I think the added element to Trump is that he's willing to do it against so-called allies. OK, let me throw it to Patrick here, because it seems to me that all of protecting the financial empire is very key to all this. I think Karen's absolutely right. But, you know, the more you do this, the more you turn the screws, even on your allies, the more people will turn away. And that's when you get a situation of desperation coming out of the White House.
It's one thing to sanction a country like Russia. Then it's another thing to threaten secondary sanctions against anybody trading with them, 100% tariffs. So he's weaponized tariffs already. This is not how tariffs are supposed to be used or historically should be used by a country. And Trump's just gone and done it on a whim. I don't know what he expects to get out of it. If the intended effect of that is to, you know, stop people trading with Russia or doing business with Russia and get them to do business with the United States, because that's really what it's about, it's probably going to net the opposite effect in the end. So he's going to get, you know, more of what he doesn't want, or more of what the United States doesn't want. That's what they're going to get as a result. It's going to absolutely accelerate the de-dollarization trends that are already happening. That's, in fact, this is like proof positive to everybody thinking about getting out of the dollar. It's giving them a great reason to get out of the dollar. So he's kind of proving the case. Trump himself is doing a good job of proving the case for BRICS and all the initiatives that BRICS has tabled there. So secondary sanctions is, this is one of the hallmarks of an empire in decline. When you start threatening your allies and sanctioning your allies, you really had it as an empire, as a hegemon. And throughout history, you see that pattern. The United States is falling right into that historical template, basically. It's very sad, but Trump is the man, apparently, to do it. If it's about bringing America down a notch, Trump's doing a brilliant job of it.
Yeah. Karen, let's talk about domestic politics here. I'm going to mention it, but I don't want to talk about it. The Epstein case is dividing MAGA. Yesterday's announcement about Ukraine. I mean, how firm is the support for Trump in MAGA? I mean, these are two major blows against what he ran on.
Yeah, and also the elimination of any of the Dodge cuts. I mean, they really played the American population. The MAGA people were played with DOGE, the reduction of government spending. They totally were played with that. So this is a series of disappointments, and they're fundamental disappointments, which mean the people who thought Trump could save America are realizing that's totally not the case. And he's very much a Biden president, which is, given all the things we know about the Biden presidency and what Trump has said about it, which MAGA believes wholeheartedly, he's proving, you know, this is terrible for Trump. Trump is not running again, obviously. I mean, age-wise and constitution-wise, he's not running again. So, you know, he's in a hurry to do something. He doesn't really need MAGA to do most of what he's going to do. And I think I think this direction of separation between Trump himself as a Biden-esque president proving himself only 6 months in and the MAGA voters, which are not bound by party. And you can see that it's a almost a third party movement without being a party. Yep. They have no loyalty. If Trump betrays them, they're going their own way. And people in America, at least the MAGA voters, very much prided themselves in being able to trust what they see with their own eyes and not listening to what American media told them about how things were, but rather looking at it and assessing, and they're doing that.
Yeah, but Craig, MAGA doesn't mean much to Trump then. I mean, one portrayal after another, even his initiative on immigration is not meeting expectations, which would be a topic for another program. But I mean, does he care? I mean, if he only had 6 months left, then I guess we could live with it. We got 3.5 more years of this.
Well, you know, Peter, I always thought that he was an inside player, not an outside player. Remember, this guy was mentored by Roy Cohen a long time ago. He was before Jeffrey Epstein. And not only did he kind of fall on MAGA and not give the promises of going after the pedophiles, you know, we also have the censorship issue, you know, where he's allowed Israel to censor Americans. No new wars. That's obviously off the table. The bombing of Iran. And of course, I'm going to end the Ukraine war in 24 hours. However, I have a little slight disagreement with Karen, because I do think that just like Obama, where I never thought I would see the level of hero worshiping for a president, the Trumpers came along and said, hold my beer. I'm still seeing tweets and comments out there. I'm like, well, listen, we could be mad at the pedophiles that did that, but also support Donald Trump, too. And he does these weird things where he calls him a creep and he acts like, you know, I threw him out of my club and that's OK. And now it's very interesting. With the Ukraine situation, now the American tax dollar doesn't come out of our pockets. The taxpayer doesn't have to pay for it. They're going to pay for his own weapons. And people are starting to use that as a reason to continue to support Donald Trump. But at the end of the day, American voters, unfortunately, they pay attention to rhetoric and not policy. So I think he'll still have a majority of people going along with him.
You know, Patrick, I don't know if you were on at the time, but I guess it was after Trump's election in the first 2 months of his presidency, part two. I worried about escalation, and I got a lot of pushback. You know, Peter is going to de-escalate now. They're going to wrap this all up. And I said, no, they're not done. They're not done. And I think I've been proven right. We're going to continue to go up the escalation ladder, because I asked Karen, what's going to happen after 50 days? Escalation. Patrick.
Yeah, and the escalator operator is the magic man, Steve Witkoff. Where is the mercurial Steve Witkoff doing a deal, setting up a deal? So all of these deals are all busted flushes, every single one of them. We're what? We're 5.5 months or 6 months in to the Trump administration, and I'm wondering whether he's going to make it to the end of his term at this rate. We're not even a full year in, and it's an unmitigated disaster. It's pushing everything towards World War III. And you remember Trump's, the thing he hung his whole campaign on, this war would never have happened if I was president, because Biden is weak, and so Trump is weak. This is one of the weakest presidents. How weak is Trump? You can't even stand up to Lindsey Graham. Like, you have a policy, you're moving in this direction, we need to end the war, and then Lindsey Graham comes and knocking at your door, and you fold like a cheap deck chair on the Titanic. And that's exactly what Trump has done. You can't even stand up to chicken hawks like this. You're not much of an alpha male. He's got alpha rhetoric, but when it comes to the crunch and actually carrying through with all these things he campaigned on, he doesn't have what it takes. He is a weak president,
yeah,
a weak leader.
And Karen, maybe in his mind, and I hope not among MAGA, the highlight of his presidency so far is that Benjamin Netanyahu has nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't get stranger than this. Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah. Well, you know, the length of time that Trump visualizes he has may be shorter than what even we think. You know, his rush early on, and I mean, I've never seen as many executive orders and, you know, these things. He's in a big hurry, and he may be in a big hurry, maybe not because of the assassination attempts, but he may be in a big hurry just because of his age and his recognition that he has, you know, what he said he could do, he can't do, whether he's weak, which I think he is, but also the system itself is rigged against any president that wants to change anything. But I think Trump is worried about his legacy, and I think that he may fear that legacy moment, when it's all added up, is coming sooner rather than later. I don't know how else to explain. He wants something to hang his hat on, and everything he's done that he could have hung his hat on, with the possible exception of the border security, has all gone to pot. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And I think he's very frustrated with his own personal ambition.
Yeah, I could remember a cover of Time magazine many, many years ago, The Incredible Shrinking President, and it was about Bill Clinton. I think that cover needs to be reintroduced. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Virginia, Florida, and in Plymouth. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.